Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. He's speaking to us from South Florida, I believe.
Exactly. I just got done a thrilling roadie that took me as far north as the Jersey Shore, but I'm back in Florida now to record-breaking heat.
So how was the situation?
last summer, even the diehard, you know, Florida isn't so bad. You get used to the heat and humidity. They're all liars. But last summer was so hot that even those guys were saying, yeah, it was a hot one.
Wow.
But so far, we're not looking great with these records and it's being set in mid-May.
Are you guys expecting another terrible hurricane season?
We've been lucky, really. And it's interesting that the insurers have all made their big move in the absence of disastrous years. You know, the last few years, Florida lucked out, at least certainly the eastern seaboard of Florida. The Gulf, Gulf of Mexico, Florida, not so much. But, you know, we've been relatively fortunate, but it's been, these good years have been accompanied by huge, and I mean tripling in my own home insurance rates, huge increases in homeowner policies.
Mm-hmm. Same thing in Canada, except here it's raging forest fires, which again this year are threatening communities in northern Alberta and northern British Columbia. Insurance, is it going to get to the point where you just can't afford it?
Yeah, we really are there. I mean, I know people in California in some better neighborhoods who have been canceled. They can't even get insurance. And, of course, that that trend is spreading into Beverly Hills 90210, some of the really very expensive neighborhoods. And that's the fact. You can't get insurance, or if you can get it at all, it's at hugely higher prices that do not have such amenities as replacement value and stuff like that. It's like even with the best available insurance, you're going to be stuck for a big deductible if you should ever need it.
Yeah, well, British Columbia back in the 70s started what they called the Insurance Corporation of BC because private insurance was too expensive for parents who wanted their 16-year-old to be able to drive their car. But then, So the government took over your car insurance. But being government, it's bureaucracy deep and efficiency poor. And so they charge you a lot, and now it's no-fault insurance. So if you get hurt by a car, you don't get a damage award. They'll give you a couple of pills and say, good luck, bud.
Right. And another problem with the government taking over is that it masks the true cost. It just gets it's tucked away in the budget deficit, whatever the shortfall is between premiums paid in and settlements paid out.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a standalone crown corporation. But this year, it's an election year, and the insurance company is giving back a $100 rebate. I think they still have a huge debt or deficit. And what's more, victims would rather have some kind of compensation. What if you lose your job? Well, there's no compensation for that. You don't get any money to make up for it. And even people are saying they can't get medical care they need. But the government's counting on most of you won't be in accidents, so you won't have to deal with this and see what a nightmare it is. They're just...
Well, Well, the all insurers, and this definitely includes the auto insurers, are headed for or already in a crack up. And, you know, I have a friend who's got a very high volume auto body shop just south of San Francisco. And he said that when the insurers were advertising on TV, beating each other's brains in competitively, that they themselves neglected to factor in the huge increase in auto repairs. You know, my friend used the example of a headlight assembly that used to be $700 on a collision replacement, but he said it's up to like $2,000 now for a lot of cars, just for a headlight. And there are other problems that are only starting to surface with the EVs, where the technology, there are not enough trained technicians to work on battery damage. If a Tesla takes a hit that only slightly damages the battery, the insurance company will total the car. There's just not enough mechanics yet that can work on a Tesla battery without fearing some explosion. So anyway, the auto insurers are about to yell bloody murder because they're way behind on their own price increases.
Wow. So take the bus, take your bike if you can, or walk.
Well, that's what the federal government seems to be pushing all the cities into. You know, they give the cities free money just to paint lines on the street that mostly block out the car lanes, and they open up huge lanes for bicycles and pedestrians. And I won't say they go unused, but I would the car lanes are were and still are more useful. So this happened back in Atlantic City. The Margate, where I grew up, is one of three communities on the island. There's Atlantic City, Ventnor, Margate, and Longport. And only Margate took the bait to paint the streets with all the, it looks like a Jackson Pollock painting, you know. They got so much paint on the streets to tell the pedestrians where they should walk and the bikes where they should ride. But they basically squeezed the cars into a lane that's narrower than most cars.
Yeah, downtown Vancouver now, because of the bike lanes, you can take 45 minutes to go three blocks. Vancouver also decided that too many cars are downtown, so they upped parking fees, took away 28,000, 30,000 parking spots. And then their parking revenue was down $800,000, so their solution was, let's hike parking fees again. And of course, fewer people took their cars. It's a what they call a negative feedback loop.
Uh-huh, right.
Yeah.
Berkeley did it in an interesting way. You know, they had a lot of a vibrant retail sector at the area of Shattuck, Telegraph, sort of near the middle of things. But then they started blocking out parking spaces and eliminating parking garages. And surprise, surprise, all the retail stores, you started seeing them getting boarded up. And many of the stores in that neighborhood have closed down. And, of course, it's a big victory for the bicyclists.
And of course, downtown cores in Canada and the U.S. now, the homeless are allowed to just basically raid any store they want. And in my little town of New Westminster, businesses are leaving in droves because they put four homeless shelters on the main street. Guess what happens? The homeless have just moved into everywhere and helped themselves.
Well, why not? You know, if you can go all the way up to $997, I think, without generating a felony.
Well, here in Canada, it's theft over and under $5,000. But again, if somebody hasn't been physically hurt, there's not a lot of response to it. And it's horrible. Small business. Most people don't realize it, but small businesses on both sides of the border generate roughly 70% of the jobs. When they die, so does your community.
And that's what kills me. You know, we get these statistics where the Federal Reserve is worried a bit about the economy, quote unquote, overheating. Everything's just so red hot with the fabulous jobs report and the fabulous this and that. But when you see we're small businesses in this country, a small business being like two-thirds of GDP, or actually, no, it's consumption that's two-thirds of GDP. But of course, the small businesses in the aggregate, they're a much bigger dollar number than the biggest companies combined. So we get reports that everything's hunky-dory, but it is getting impossible to operate a small business, an independent business. And you can see it most clearly in restaurants, you know. On this little road trip that I took, I stopped it was beautiful Lumberton, North Carolina. And of course, North Carolina is a big barbecue state. And I figured when I pulled into town at 9 p.m., I was pretty hungry, and I'd go to some barbecue pit and have a great late night snack. But it was just Hardee's and McDonald's and Applebee's. And there were no, at least not on the main drag, there were no barbecue restaurants. And it's the same all over America, you know, to be an independent restaurant owner today and survive. And if you live to survive till the last year or two, you've had to survive inflation. So, and everybody's cutting back on portions and the quality of what they serve. It's just impossible.
Sure. Ross Clark, who's on This Week in Money with us every week, just did a cruise, and he said everything's smaller on the cruise ship. That even the cutlery is smaller. The plates are smaller. The portions are smaller. The shows are shorter. There's fewer performers. Everything's been cut back. And also, you're on a ship now with 3,500 of your closest friends. You know, right. So it's crowded, and you get less.
Yeah, when you look at the pictures of some of these floating cities, it's at the density of a beehive, really. And I don't know really how the cruise industry somehow got past COVID. I guess it wasn't because they did anything interesting or heroic. It's just that the COVID itself died an ignominious death. So, but there was no way you were getting on one of those boats as close as you were to your fellow passengers without stepping off needing your shot of ivermectin.
Well, I think it would be interesting to skate, I guess, on a rink on a ship, you know, with the thing rolling, especially in heavy seas. Oh, he wasn't expecting that roll, like you'd hear in a hockey game. Rick, AI, is this the miracle solution? Once AI gets, I mean, AI's been around for 10 years. It's just getting the publicity now.
Well, the point I always make, and to me, AI is inseparable from some of the main applications. To me, our main interface with AI is autocorrect, autospell, autotext. So when we dictate something into the phone, it comes out with such a horrible garble. Well, that's AI. That's AI at work. And if they can't even get a basic sentence down, if I say, we're going to meet at 7, comma, it types out the word comma. And if you go online trying to figure out how to make it stop typing the word comma or the word period, there's 10,000 pages that don't tell you how to do it. So to me, that's AI. And mainly, what AI is simply, if it's going to accomplish anything, it will get us used to settling for less. And you'll see that the degrading of services will continue. You know, we'll have more telemedicine, and we'll have more robotic checkouts, but they all pretty much stink. And we may not notice it in some areas, but I think we'll definitely notice it when they start doing brain and heart surgery with some affirmative action doctor who's being guided with AI tools. And, you know, there's so I think that's what AI is. AI is going to substitute mediocrity for, well, even where we already have mediocrity, things will just get worse. But it's just a way of putting people out of their jobs, And there's no real genius or creativity or certainly no emotion in artificial intelligence. You can tell when something has been written or scripted by AI. And of course, if Disney, everything that Disney turns out isn't bad enough already, you're going to see it get even worse when their movies start being written essentially with, they'll take the focus group surveys and they'll feed them into Disney's AI creativity module, and it'll spit out the worst crap you've ever seen, whether it's animated or real life.
Also, on the law scene, a Vancouver lawyer has been censured for using AI to put together a legal paper where you're supposed to cite precedents in past law, and it just made them up. AI just made them up.
Well, that's interesting, because it seems like, as down as I am on AI, it seems like it would have legitimate potential in the courtroom, because if an AI audio sensor were sitting there in the courtroom, it should be able to access the entire law library, every precedent on the books in the U.S. in U.S. law. It's right there. And it seems ready-made for AI, that you could replace even a criminal attorney with an AI respondent. So that surprises me that this lawyer was trying to break new ground and they've censured him.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, what's going on with gold?
Oh, you got to love it now. You know, I've got a lot of gold bugs as subscribers, and they refer to these days when, you know, gold and silver are rallying or looking great, almost to the point where you're thinking you're encouraged. And then Mr. Slammy comes along and knocks gold down $100 in a few days. Well, Mr. Slammy is up against some pretty diligent buying, and his old tricks aren't working. You know, the corrections in gold and silver have been relatively shallow. They can beat it down, not as much, and neither gold nor silver stays down for as long. So this is the real deal, and it's so much the real deal as far as the bull market is concerned, that we're going to start seeing some good movement in the stocks.
Silver, is there a possible shortage coming up, and can you get your hands on actual physical silver if you order it?
Well, I think you just have to have, it's easy to see that the demand for silver way outstrips the supply. You know, just browse some of the dealers, you know, the coin dealers, and they're out of stock. They can't get you whatever silver rounds, ingots you want in any quantity. I have a friend who, he was mostly in a real estate business in California, but he started buying 1,000 ounce ingots of silver a while ago, and he stepped up his purchases when he was told by a company that had never had a delivery problem that he might have to wait, instead of several days, he might have to wait 2 to 3 weeks for delivery. So that encouraged him to buy even more. And I have to say, when you have the courage and confidence of your convictions in that way, it certainly hasn't done him wrong. You know, he's bought silver, but his cost basis for most of what he holds is very good. It's you know, probably below $20 an ounce, and he's doing fine. So yeah, you just have to trust your own hard logic there, that the demand, that the price of silver cannot be suppressed forever if the demand for physical continues to be high relative to readily available supply.
Yes, now silver used for solar panels, But what people don't realize about silver, it's the best conductor of electricity and for super high-end things like high-speed computers, military gear. They use a lot of silver.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they use, even artificial diamonds for mm-hmm. that right now. And they will figure more and more into microchips. But also, there's a whole other class of materials that could substitute in the conductivity for silver and gold. And I'm talking about graphene, which I guess is just not quite in its infancy, but it's in its adolescence. But you're going to see that used more and more in high-tech situations.
What are some of the areas you're seeing some really interesting growth in?
Unfortunately, you know, government and healthcare. Hmm. It's like Billy Sutton said, you just got to follow the money. And healthcare is headed into a crack up, but we're still, at least nominally, living off the fatted calf. You know, we've yet to have that epiphany that that millennials and Gen Xers simply are not going to be able to cough up whatever it costs to replace every baby boomer's hips and knees, and to get the baby boomers a couple of stents. So that's yet to happen. But that's where the growth is, really. It's just in government jobs and healthcare.
The Magnificent Seven, are they still magnificent?
I hate that word. I refer to those stocks as the lunatic sector. There's nothing magnificent at all about them. They're just stocks that the chimpanzees who manage your money and mine buy and hold. They don't sell those stocks. They just continue to accumulate them. So there's no brain work involved, not even a pattern or a cycle. They just buy them and, of course, shake them down occasionally. Create air pockets so they can step in and start buying again. So they're not far from being magnificent. You take a few of them, they're just glorified advertising agencies. I'm talking about Facebook and Google, and they're just hot air, you know. I hate to harken back to the robber barons, but when they were building railroads and, you know, oil derricks and things, that was really what created wealth. Just the capital investment in brick and mortar was and still is the only source of real wealth. And I think the intellectual, digital, virtual aspect of wealth has been greatly inflated. So anyway, the Magnificent Seven, they're way overvalued.
Rick, crude, is it going to pick up over the summer when driving season hits, or is there a huge domestic supply?
Crude has been a little bit of a puzzler for me. I just looking at the charts, it seemed to have $100 a barrel written all over it. I had no problem projecting that, but it somehow slowed down, and I guess it's not a coincidence that the upward energy in crude oil prices has been weak in this part of the election cycle. You know, we're coming up on a November election four months away, and it's not a surprise to see at some arcane level of officialdom an attempt to suppress the price of crude. So if you strip out the always possible conflagration in the Middle East, some supply side shock, I think crude may find its way down to $40 a barrel. But it's very risky to be shorted because you always have that possibility of an exogenous shock causing the price of crude to go haywire. It seems much more resistant to that than it used to be. You know, crude was a more sensitive barometer to geopolitical problems than it has been. One example, you know, you have the Houthi shooting missiles shooting at tankers in the Suez, and it really didn't have much impact on anything, really. I mean, I think it's probably given a boost to inflation to the extent that a lot of shippers are taking alternative routes that that cost a lot of fuel, a lot of extra miles. But anyway, I would look for crude to be pretty subdued into the election.
Interest rates, will they come down just for political purposes, not instead of inflation has been wrestled down to the ground?
Yeah, inflation has not been wrestled down to the ground, and the only thing that's going to wrestle it to the ground is a full-blown deflationary collapse, a debt collapse. But yeah, we are having consumer inflation. There's a lot more of it in the pipeline, but it's slowly, it's losing steam, really, simply because the real economy, as opposed to the statistical one that we're always being, that's always being shoved in our faces, is dying. Everybody recognizes that there's no great economic strength right now, and that has to have a damping impact on inflation. So I think inflation will be coming down, but not very quickly. And as far as interest rates, one area where I was just wrong in a way I read it. I wrote quite extensively, this was years ago, that if interest rates, long-term rates, ever went higher than 3%, it would put a crushing deflationary weight on the economy. And so, lo and behold, you know, the 10-year and the 30-year both kicked up to 5%, and the economy was still ostensibly humming along, outwardly humming along, and I couldn't figure it out. But I guess the only explanation is that there's a very long lag time between when you have higher rates and those rates eventually work their way through the economy in every possible way. You know, they increase the burden of whatever you owe in dollars, and it has to have its effect. But I just never foresaw the possibility that the economy could, that there would be such a long lag between 5% rates and the hammer blow that delivered to the economy. So it's pretty much universally agreed on right now that we are headed into a recession. There's just no avoiding it, regardless of whatever phony statistics we read between now and the election. So I think interest rates they probably topped long-term rates. And that's not an optimistic forecast, by the way, because even at 2%, rates can be crushing. You know, as I always point out, you know, during the great financial crash of 2007, 2008, 2009, the rates came way down, but the collateral value of homes that were mortgaged was decreasing by 10% a year. So mortgage rates are so high right now we've got real problems. And the biggest problem, you know, the pushing on a string problem, is that we're not going to have a refi cycle. Ideally, rates will come down so much that everybody will be able to do a cash out refi. We'll all be like freshly reloaded with bags of cash extracted from the inflated equity in our home. However, this time it's not imaginable how that could happen, you know, because if rates did come down, mortgage rates from a current 7% to, let's say, even 3%, it would only happen in conjunction with the kind of killer recession where home values themselves have fallen maybe 20, 30, 40, 50%. So we're not going to get that refi cycle this time, which is almost like nitrogen fuel for restarting the economy. It simply can't happen. And that was maybe the most important, I'll call it a tool, but it's basically a flim-flam operation, a little hoax perpetrated by the Fed. So they just can't do it this time. There's no way that people who were, and also so many homes are being sat on right now because they were refied at, who knows, 3% or even, well, let's call it 3%. So how low do you have to go before people say, I'm going to do a refi and take some of the equity out of my home? It absolutely can't happen. So that's a huge problem for trying to motor ourselves out of the next recession, which may, if it hasn't begun already, it's going to begin soon.
I could see people saying, yay, lower interest rates. That means I can now afford the mortgage on this house I want to buy. But because usually when rates are falling, it means you're in recession. You don't have a job, so you don't qualify to buy a house anyway.
Right. It's sort of a catch-22.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Well, thanks for inviting me on, Jim. It was certainly a pleasure.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on X at How Street, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.